Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 124. I'm comedian Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, and today, comedy promotion. David Allison is a comedy promoter well known for his highly themed improvised shows, most notably This Is Your Trial, the show where you put your friends on trial for something that they've done that has annoyed you. In this episode, it's a slightly different vibe. For those of you who don't know, my day job, I suppose is the best way of describing it, because I do it during the day, is I write funny jokes for social media, for brands that want to appear more humorous on Twitter mainly, but Facebook and Instagram. I do a lot of this for corporate clients, but I also do a lot of social media consultancy for comedy clubs and promoters on how to use the platforms better. I tend to keep this side of my work quite quiet, if I'm honest with you. I didn't really want to be known for that. I want to be known as a comedian, but it is something that I do, and it's something that I'm proud of, and it's something that I'm good at. So I thought, you know what would be really interesting? Let's get someone on who has asked me to help them with their social media and record a session that we do to show how much thought and effort goes into social media behind the scenes on a club. David originally got in touch with me and asked for an informal meeting in London about how we can work together, and after an absolutely lovely chat, I offered him the chance to come on the podcast and do another session to show what goes on behind the scenes when you are putting together a structured and strategic campaign to make your content hit the right people at the right times. That's what this pod is. It's not completely how I do these sessions normally. There's still a lot of the Q&As that I would normally do for a podcast that you know and love, but I want to flag that this one is a little bit more freeform than my other episodes for that specific reason. If you want to talk to me about social media writing, either jokes or otherwise, or consultancy work, you can contact me via my email address, which is simon.m.kane@gmail.com, or you can buy my book. It's called How to Make a Living by Working for Free, where I interviewed comedians, writers, musicians, and so much more about how they built their own audience online through free content, and then they asked their audience to support them to keep creating things for them. You can get that at my website, which is simonkane.co.uk/shop, or you can find the link in the show notes. I think that's everything. Before I hit play, if you're new here, please do not forget to hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please do consider giving us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. And either way, please do join the Facebook group. It's called Ask the Industry Podcast, obviously. But for now, this is David Allison. Level's great. Okay, so you've listened to it before, so I don't need to do too much of an intro, but basically I would normally do an intro and post and then cut it, and then I ask the person to incorporate the first question into their answer. So the first voice the person that the listener hears is yours. So I figured if we start with what you do in terms of the shows you run and beyond the fringe, so like the corporate stuff and what you're moving into, and why I figure it's probably worth you explaining why we originally met up before the festival, just so that how this came about. So from your perspective and what you wanted.
I mean, why did we meet? What was Right. Shall I say who I am?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm Dave Allison, and I would say I'm a producer. Which covers a lot of bases. So I've been a producer of all sorts of different things for the last 20 years, really. Started with TV and documentaries, and then corporate filming, education filming. But fundamentally, I I'm good at originating ideas and then making something out of it. And so that started with films and ideas for a TV show. I invented a format, a couple of formats that did okay. And I just like making new things. And so I now produce comedy shows, live comedy shows, which came about a bit of an accident, really. I studied law, didn't want to be a lawyer, wanted to tell stories, went into trying to make videos and films of stories, then left that world because documentaries doesn't pay, and started a family. So I took a job with the University of Law, and that was making videos to teach law. So I was like, law came back after I thought I'd avoided it. Quite a easy job, and so I had lots of spare time, and so got an idea for a comedy show because I was going to a lot of open mic events and I saw how talented people were. And then when I found out how they were, well, not all of them, but
we'll get to that.
But I was amazed of some of the talent that was on, and then I found out that they were doing it for free and weren't getting paid, and I didn't, you know, I really didn't know that world. And so my brain got, oh, I wonder what I can think of to do with, you know, what can we do that's different with that. And one day it was my birthday, I used to always go out for like comedy nights on my birthday, and almost always I'm on stage at some point, I get pulled out, or I just have that sort of face, I think, and I'm not shy. And I loved it, like, you know, being involved. And I wondered about a show for someone's birthday that I could organize and make them the center of the show. So, you know, specifically a private event. And so came up with this quiz type game, this panel game. So best friends would be competing with each other to see who was the best mate of the birthday boy or birthday girl, with comedians, open mic comedians either side, helping and making them funny. And then I write the rounds and games and that type of thing. Did one. It was great. It sort of worked. And, you know, I stole some of the ideas from Nevermind the Buzzcocks and, you know, that type of thing. But then when at work, there's a lot of University of Law where I was working. There was a judge's wig, basically. There was a judge's wig hanging around. And I wondered that the quiz master might wear a wig. And quickly that evolved into, this is your trial. And it was put in. Someone in the audience on trial, because the quiz became a roast anyway. If you know, it was like a natural evolution. And then did the first trial for a charity, and it was just awesome. You like just it when it seen it in, because you can't really rehearse it, you can't practice it. Though I did prepare a lot of notes for the lawyers about the people who were going to be put on trial. That was the first version of it. And yeah, everyone loved it. You know, the comedians really enjoyed it and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually that became, well, it was a lot of work for me. And often the funniest bits were when the comedians were improvising and just making stuff up. And when they asked questions of the defendant or their friends. And I thought, well, this just be improvised if the comedians know what to do. And I would prepare them with legalese. You know, I dress them up in gowns and give them, you know, notepads and things like that. But it became quickly an improvised show, and I got better, you know, the comedians were better, you know. I guess when the comedians, yeah, I think it was Edinburgh 2013 when, you know, the bar was raised, and it's been like three or four hundred shows since now.
And so what was the impetus of bringing it to Edinburgh then? Why here as opposed to just Carrick? Because I assume it was running as a regular thing at that point.
Well, it wasn't regularly. It was only doing them for private events. So I didn't have a public show until after the first Edinburgh. And the idea was to sell the shows for private events, for birthdays and that was it. The very first show I did in Edinburgh was for Hearts FC, the football club.
Okay.
So that was at the football club, 200 Hearts fans, and it was when they were broke, they were bankrupt. So I approached them to see if they would do a show or take on a show, and they would get all the proceeds. So raise some money, raise some awareness of the show for me, and persuaded the manager to do it. And Gary Locke, he was a very, very kind manager to put himself forward to be put on trial. So we had lots of like ex-players coming to roast him. Got Janie Godley, Norman Lovett. Yeah, they were the comedians. And so that was kind of my launch into Fringe, which was quite a big splash in a, you know, for the first time. I didn't know anything, but I did a lot of research into, well, just, you know, thinking of ideas, how can I make it relevant locally? Mm-hmm. That was my main thing. So I also put on a show with some local talent. So I got in touch with someone through the football club, the Fans Hearts Fan Club. He was a comedian and gave me some leads towards different things for the Hearts show. So I sort of gave him a show to help run for his mates, essentially. So that was like a nice pay it forward. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of that. That was my first thing of Fringe, was just spreading myself everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So it started kind of behind the scenes, private parties, functions, you know, maybe on your corporate, but that sort of thing. Then moved into you coming up here and doing sort of one-off locally to try and build a bit of a awareness, and then sort of run of an Edinburgh, like a quite a short run, five shows. It's quite a short run of an Edinburgh Fringe where they're all individual shows. Yeah. And I suppose, does that count as a stunt? I don't know whether that would have counted as a stunt according to the Edinburgh Festival, or whether they would have
a stunt.
Yeah, because they count sort of things where you, so like I think Daniel Sloss has like two listings in the program. He's the only one that has that, because he, I don't know how his agent does it, because you're only supposed to have one. Oh. And it's sort of a stunt each year, and then it's like people that, you know, do things on the mile and stuff. So I don't know whether they counted that as a, whether that helped you promotionally, or whether that was,
I mean, I probably called it that myself.
Okay.
You know, oh, this is different. And you know, and I got in touch with Claire Smith Scotsman, wrote something. I knew Copstick as well, or we got to know her, so got her involvement, and so she'd written about it. So I totally did it differently. So yeah, that was, I don't know what the norm was. I didn't know what was expected. I knew that it was a bit unorthodox anyway. And yeah, I mean, I like to experiment and try, why not try this, do that. And but yeah, I don't really do much in the way of reading the guidelines or what you're supposed to do.
Totally. So did you sell out all five of those from Kickstarter or from the crowdfunding?
Yes, kind of.
Okay. Let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people would love to sell their show out before they even arrive, and a lot of people are doing crowdfunding, even to the point of Fringe Central now work with Kickstarter. I've got Kickstarter coming on this podcast during the festival because they want to get seen by more comedians. So you, when, what year was this? Let's put a date on it. 2013. So it wasn't really, not many people crowdfunding at that point. So you went online, made a crowdfunding, and basically said you can buy a show for £500.
Yep. And also, I mean, Kickstarter, I made it work. A key tip I would give about that is, because I already knew I'd sold a show. No, not to Hearts. Hearts was a separate, that wasn't through the Kickstarter, actually.
Okay,
the Kickstarter. To the law firm, that's now my regular sponsor.
Okay.
But because that was a guarantee, I made that look like it, that they bought it, they paid me through the Kickstarter. So that was going to be a chunk that was reaching the target.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty much every single contribution. You know, there was lots of other contributions, smaller contributions. It's friends, people I know.
Okay.
So I did a big sort of begging campaign to it. But, you know, I gave quite a lot out. There's a lot of admin, you know, and so it was definitely worth doing, but fortunately my merchandise was kind of quite interesting, or I think it was, you know, we've seen people sort of wanted it, and I made a video for it, which was quite unusual. I sort of dressed myself up as a judge and doing a bang 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 begging, you know, you don't know me, blah blah. And it had a green screen with a, looked like I was in a court.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I don't know whether that necessarily helped, but it was unusual. I put quite a bit of effort into the Kickstarter page. And I was smart with what my target was to make sure it got there.
Yeah, you didn't go over the top.
Yeah. I didn't ask for too much, and then it did oversell, which is
great. Yeah.
But yeah, selling the individual shows. Like one, I sold one of the shows to happen after Edinburgh.
Okay.
Then so there was Ball Bags, there was Inksters, there was the Hearts one, which was separate. They was tickets were sold by Hearts. Then there was Mark Dolan doing the one for the local open micers. So that wasn't sold through Kickstarter. Yeah, there was another one, and I've totally forgotten who it was. Tony Lord did the Ball Bags. I've forgotten.
It's okay. Yeah. It's 2013. Yeah. You know, yeah. Okay. So to put this in perspective, you've now come back from Edinburgh. You've done the one extra one that you were planning on doing. Mm-hmm. Where did you go from there? How did you continue to keep the night momentum going? What was the plan for it?
In Edinburgh, I had... So Tim Fitzhyam did a show. Trevor Locke had already done one before. Yeah, to Barry Ferns, Tony Law. So yeah, I think it's when Tim had done one, I thought, well, he was the linchpin for being the judge, you know, was clearly made for him. So with him and Trevor, and then I was introduced to Tom Tuck, you know, my aim was to make it's an improv show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just pure improv.
Totally.
Need to try and sell it to the general public based on that. And so we what was the first venue? Grand Union. It was the Grand Union, and I knew I could sell it to lawyers first of all, because they'd quite a few of them I knew through work had been before, and that's the Grand Union was right in the heart of Law Town. So then we got that going then and started doing that monthly, and it was a, you know, it's a beautiful sort of looking room as well, very unusual. Mm-hmm. wasn't a comedy venue.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that helps, like, to set the scene a bit more? Or?
I think that's a priority now, for it to look and feel more than just a comedy night, you know, because there's quite a bit of effort in some ways to try and justify the tickets, you know, because like the ticket prices and, you know, then the quality of talent, because I'm keeping the performers for the whole hour or more. So yes, that made a big difference. Quite soon after, went to the Hornsey Town Hall, which was spectacular looking, you know, and that was, and it was also nearer where I live. And so, yeah, I knew the people managing that place and did some there and got some, you know, great photography happening. And so, yeah, the look was always important, and that was always impressive to bigger name comedians. You know, mm-hmm. I got Al Murray came to do one pretty soon after that first Edinburgh at the Grand Union.
Yeah. So my question there would be, it might be both, so I grant you on that, but it feels like the theming of the show, so a bit of ostentatious, you know, when you hear improv show, if it's just an improv show, there's loads of those.
Yeah.
And so it's a bit, I don't want to say generic, because that's putting down a lot of people, and I don't mean it like that, but it needs something more to it that means people can look forward to it, and means people can...
understand and have a
reason to book, like, not just, oh, we're going to an improv show. With a comedy show you might go, oh, we're just going to a comedy show, but I think with improv, because it's so unplanned and so in the moment, and you need to have the chops to do that, I think there needs to be, maybe not needs to be, but it helps to have something. So I'm wondering whether someone like Al Murray, who is a big name in comedy terms, whether that helps sell tickets, or whether that helps push that your night further, or whether it still was the theme of the night and the vibe of the night that helped get people in the door. He's not known for improv. Do you know?
No,
what I'm
well, I say I didn't. I mean, that was a real coup to have him do a show really early on, and it was because it was a mutual friend who, in fact, he was the very first guy who was the judge for me. Who he's not comedian anymore, but he was he's friends with Al and had mentioned it to him. You know, I've been doing this show. That's, you know, it's great fun. And Al had told him how that sounds great. You know, can I have a go? You know, Al kind of literally asked how he could have a go. So I never really thought about him before then. And so I got in touch with Al and said, would you fancy having a go? And not even thought with, oh, can he do it? I just assumed he could.
Yeah.
I just felt that, of course he can. Yeah. But
And his personality and persona, on stage persona, I feel would suit it quite well.
Well, it was a question. He wasn't sure whether to be pub landlord or not. That was a discussion that we had. And I said, yes, be pub landlord. It'll be easier for you. You know, just because I think the roles are character roles anyway. Acts come and do it, and they adopt and they create what type of lawyer that they're going to be. So I think that was a useful direction. I think, you know, if there was like a lot ongoing thing for Al doing it, he might become a different type of lawyer, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, it just wore it like a glove. So the theme of an improv show based on courtroom trial was useful for me to explain to comedians more, as you know, to get the name comedians. Audiences, I found, don't know comedians. You know, they don't even, they really don't. There's comedy audiences who do know comedians, obviously, but the majority of people looking for a funny night out, it's not the names. And, you know, I've had an embarrassment of riches with famous people in my mind and doing my show. And then I'm going around talking to people, trying to say, oh, you know, come to this, such and such is in it. And they don't know. But it is actually the concept that is the easier sell. And they get that straight away. You know, put your mates on trial. You know, oh, that'll be amazing. And they come up with all, you know, they tell you what.
They're like, I hate him because of this, or
I hate him. Yeah, they get them started straight away. So it's not the names that has ever sold the shows, really, but it's the quality of the performer who can do it. You know, they have to. It's not I've seen, you know, some people do struggle with it, but that's the fun I have to do the castings. It's my favourite thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shit lawyers out there, so why would there not be? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's bound to be a comedian who's not very good at it. Okay, so, and then we met up July time, I think it was, in London, and you were talking to me about social media and how that could potentially impact your branding and your reach for the idea, because you, as I recall, you wanted to get more corporate bookings potentially and become more. He's nodding, by the way, and forgotten that it's an audio podcast.
Yes. I'm nodding a lot, and I don't want to overlap you, but fine. Yes.
I'm trying to do the same as well. And we were discussing how you would get in with more corporate gigs, but also where the night could potentially go on the internet as a thing and as a concept that people could buy into, that would maybe make them tell people about or come down to see. Is that still what you want after?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've adopted, well, I had, you know, Twitter accounts and Facebook, and I'm got Instagram now as well. I've been using social media from the start, and I guess certainly with the initial things with Kickstarter requires it, it's not been much of a strategy. And at different points in time, people said, oh, you should just be using that Twitter account for only show related things, I spout what I think as well, and I'm not very strategic with the business of it all. It's happened, and you know, most of the corporate bookings have come through people who have been to the shows and or told their friends, so it's been quite organic, but not me going out and finding them. And I think there's some tricks that I might have missed for getting to different, relying on comedy audiences, you know, who are more discerning in many ways. I know that the show can be, it's loved by people who don't know comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they've never seen anything like that before. And there's more of them. Mm-hmm. How do I get to them? You know, and there's different things that I've tried. I mean, you know, creating a family show was one direction to open up markets.
Have you seen the sorry, don't interrupt you. Have you seen Comedy Club for Kids? Have just launched a podcast, for example.
Yes.
I found that a really interesting one as well, because I don't think there are many comedy podcasts aimed at kids at the moment.
No,
really.
No, and I'd be interested. I mean, and I think they are. I mean, I'm friends with them, and they, they're great. Isabel's
awesome.
Force, and I'd be paying attention to that for sure. And yes, and that been wanting always. I've always recorded shows. I've got so much recording of shows, video and audio, and that's my other profession.
Yeah,
but. And I've put stuff on my website. I've tried all sorts of different things, but it's when we were talking, the idea of shorter podcasts, maybe individual cases rather than doing promo videos. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is another piece of entertainment, another piece of content that can be heard by more people, and then that further markets and sells the other products, licenses. Yeah. But I've got ADHD, so I'm a bit scattered, and I'm like, oh, about this shiny new thing, and then I move on to another thing, and then I'll buy some Google ads, and I'll go and do. So I've realised. Came to speak to you to go and spread the load a bit, or focus a bit on what, because I've spent so much time on things that were fun, but where's the pay?
Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's value in doing stuff for fun and experimenting, but at the end of the day, if the room's empty, you don't get to eat.
I just end up spinning a lot of plates, and so thinking business wise, I got on to an entrepreneur program, and that was great because it was a different sort of mindset to hearing and with other people with their startup businesses, and this was mainly a scheme for tech companies, so that was inspiring. Actually, this is how other people approach their innovation and ideas, so I learned quite a bit from that. Thinking of who is my customer. This was a big change. My customers for corporates are not the audience.
No.
They're not the audience. And that was, what? Because that's why I'm so used to thinking about the... And it's just one person in the office who makes the booking, who's got the job for booking the Christmas party. I just need to work out how to sell to, and it's usually her. But, what's that approach? And who are those businesses that are more open to something that's a bit different, more participatory? Mm. Yeah, and I did quite a few other corporate type event jobs. I always end up volunteering or get involved with shows and seeing how other people do it. And so I was working, producing the African comedy show up in Golders Green for a bit, which was a real eye-opener for an entirely different audience. Mm-hmm. There's no booze sold at all. It was in a church. And, made me think of the angles so that was a bit of, that wasn't anything to do with corporates. But it was about sponsorship. So I know I'm quite good at keeping other revenue streams in mind and thinking that there's sponsorship as well, and how it can provide entertainment for an event that something else is happening, how supplementary it can be as a service to things. So
completely. When we spoke last, I remember, I don't know if you would have heard it because it's only been out 2 days, so I wouldn't blame you, especially as these last 2 days. I figured I'd put it out now because everyone's traveling up, and that meant they might have some time to listen to it on the train. I've just put out an episode with Jacob from HD Management, and he was talking about, so when we were talking, we were saying to get those mainly the HR person who does the booking for the corporate, for the Christmas party mainly, in the room. How do you get them in the room and convince them? It's, and also get, maybe even just get on their radar, because they might have sorted out their Christmas party. A lot of them sort out now, August, September time, so they might they might just be thinking about it for next year. And he said that for his showcase shows, for his act, I think he's got about 8 now, he puts all 8 on, and they all do sort of 10 to 12 minutes, and he only puts 20 tickets on sale to the public in a room that holds about 80, and then he invites 60 industry people, and maybe 30 will turn up.
Which industry?
Whatever he's trying to push. So if he's trying to push TV, he'll invite 60 TV people. If he's trying to push radio, he'll push whatever it is. Okay. Yeah. In this instance,
but always some.
Yeah, with a target in mind, and it's so that they're not the only ones in the room, because obviously a lot of them will know each other, and so you kind of don't want them all sitting next to each other. Yeah. But also, you want the front row to be actually people who like comedy and want to to discover new comedy. And so he was telling on the pod, he was saying, I put out tickets and I make sure that the back rows are, you know, they're reserved, so like they're for the industry, so the laughs are at the front, mm-hmm. people at the back can sit and judge and with their notepads if they want and whatever they're doing. And I think it's the same kind of thing, and it reminded me of what we were talking about, where I think, you know, same thing, you'll need people in the room that actually want to watch the show, because you definitely don't want it to just be a room of HR people.
Sure.
But
I need them to be involved.
Exactly.
So which is quite a, you know, it is a different proposition because of the, I don't know, trying, you know, getting a bunch of different HR people together in a room. I mean, I think the best thing for me, sorry, I'm thinking about this. Yeah, because my show is improvised and it requires audience participation, and also from experience when it's sprung upon an audience and they don't know it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, it can, you know, it doesn't work and it's more of a challenge than it needs to be. So showcasing it as a live experience is, I can't see how to make that work for the corporate market trying to get I mean, I've got recordings, so I, you know, in a way, I mean, I know that being there when it's live, and but people do, they can see it. They can see, oh, I imagine when, you know, accounts department's sitting over there and that's where marketing will be, and you know, they hate each other, and you know, they already fill in the gaps. So once they get the premise and once they can see how it works and how it's funny, I think recreating it, I don't know, I would try anything to get more HR people. I think this is the other thing. I've been doing so many of these other like monthly shows with the hope that people will turn up to think about, I mean, just, we just do them anyway because they're fun, but as an advert and get the right people to go back to their office. And I always talk to people and say, oh, you know, we do this for work events, you know, while they're there. But I think my strategy really is to go directly to those people and have conversations.
Well, too, I was actually thinking about as well is having, because I intermittently work in offices to write jokes for people essentially, and often the social media team find a meme or find a video and send it around the office. Right. They'll sort of, you know, oh, this is a you know, a little clip. Hey, everyone, 2 minutes off your work, you know, check out this dog video for today, or whatever it would be and stuff. And I was thinking, I don't know how you would do this, because I think it would be a harder sell for someone to bitch to be that video going around.
Yeah.
But I figured if you know people in an office, or you have friends who still do office work, you could even say to them, hey, I've just uploaded a load of these sort of trials. Here's like 3 or 4. I don't know whether they'd be of interest to you, or I thought, or maybe even like if there's like one specific to the work that office does, you go, hey, I saw this one, I thought your office would get a kick out of it, send it off to them. Because then that way it doesn't necessarily have to go direct to the hiring person. It can go just around that way, and at the end all you need is sort of a card that just says book your own, you know, event sort of thing, and that way it's more subtle.
Can I hire you? Will you come and do a job? Absolutely. I think that's
what I thought you were doing when we were in London.
I think you're right. I think I've got all sorts of short videos that are generic little clips that, but just to show which acts are doing it and that type of thing. But
because that's specifically for corporates, you obviously wouldn't do that for an Edinburgh show. You know, they don't need to.
Well, I think it's getting the weather with hashtagging and, you know, the biscuit trial, and you know, and if that's if that's topical or something, you know, there's a Trump trial that I've got recorded. Yeah. There's a Brexit trial. There's a patriarchy trial. Yeah, there's themes like that, which I'm sure could hit a rich seam of attention. So yeah, totally. I think that is a good way of using
the office dynamic,
social media, and you know, and how it shares, how you get the thing shared. I mean, it's one of the great things about this job. Just there's no written rules about it, and if you've got something that is funny, it's not shameful to go and try and punt it around either. You know, it's actually,
I think we all feel a bit, you know, so self, even now, like I'm, you know, if I do a tweet about, you know, my show, I feel really sort of like, ooh, self-promotory. And it's like, they're following me for a reason.
Yeah. Do you know? I don't know. It's funny. Comedians are strangely, from my experience, quite precious about things like that. Mm. And, you know, maybe because I'm not on stage, maybe because I've not got that skin in the game, I'm quite shameless, and you know, so I probably have been annoying and repetitive at times, but sorry, you know, just turn me off or whatever. Yeah. If it's so,
because I think I don't remember whether I text you this or not, so forgive me if I've repeated myself, but I remember saying so I'm reading my notes of ideas, because this is a different one for me. Normally I you know, write a load of questions and I'm doing a ton of sort of background of how you got into the bit, all that sort of stuff, whereas this one's more general as a chat about social media and about how it can impact a themed thing like this, because there's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of, you know, sort of, you know, there's the pun run, or there's they regularly tweet, you know, sort of puns, or they retweet the interesting ones.
Beck Hill, I think, is amazing. She's the best. I mean, her creativity with ideas to hook her followers into a game or a thing.
God. I've been watching it as a run up to Edinburgh, and every day I'm like, oh God, you've thought of another one.
Yeah.
It drives me insane, because the amount of times follow Beck Hill on Twitter, I'll put a link to her in the thing. But every time I watch her, I'm just like, you must have spent, I mean, I don't know whether it just organically comes to her or whether she just knows how she does it, because she's just so creative on there.
I think when you get started with doing, you know, trying something different, get a response, and she's got such a following now anyway that expects it. It's obviously part of her show is using, you know, multimedia anyway, and music and you know, flip charts and pictures, and so it's perfect for those, for using social media, for adding content smart ways, and you know, and I think I've had a few little successes that have come by support. You know, you try different things, you know, asking a question to see if you can get a response to something, and it might not be directly to do with the show, we did a show in for the Leicester Comedy Festival, first time going there, and you know, it was going to be a trial, it was going to be the same sort of thing, but I studied in Leicester, so I had some sort of awareness of the town, but it was at that particular time, just before the festival, they'd found the bones of King Richard's in a car park, so that, you know, I jumped on that and made the show the trial of the King Richard III trial, putting the whole of the city of Leicester on trial to see whether they deserved to keep inter the bones, and that worked really well, you know. And then it gave me a hook. I got the mayor to go. I got the archaeologist who found them, and then I also got some responses from the House of York, or fans of the House of York, that were offended by things I was saying, making fun of it, which is, you know, so I was doing a number of tweets and Facebook posts, and got some quite angry messages back, and tried to apologize, but just explain it's a comedy show.
Yeah.
But that's great, you know, so tapping into something that's obvious, I mean, it's something topical, that's local, something that's where you can, I'm fortunate with this show that it's often possible to do that, to have a theme
and a repeat thing with your thing that can be quite easily incorporated is keeping it local and is aiming for something local, whereas for example the pun run might be harder. I mean, maybe you can pun the name of the city, or for example there's I'm trying to think of other ones in London now, my brain's come back, but there's a lot of those, there's the Distraction Club, or there's what's the name, oh god, see now I feel like I need to remember them. So we've done Ostentatious, we've done Shoot from the Hip, the Showstoppers. There's all sorts of ones that are harder to make local.
Yes.
And I mean, they can sort of maybe do something about it, but I think with yours you could, you know, do the trial of, like you said, the king, that you could, I was, the thing I was going to suggest, or the thing that I was thinking about, was on Twitter there's a lot of arguments that happen where it's like, should this person be, you know, hung for the thing that they, not hung, but you know, like social media hung for the thing that they've been accused of, even without due process at the moment, you know, like there's rumours of this person doing this, and I was thinking, maybe not all of them obviously, but there are some of those that you could easily do, hey, we're going to do a poll, you know, what do you actually think, you know, yes, no, and then reply if you've got more information, and have just a kind of back and forth. Or you could even do like a video with you and two comedians before a show on the day of the thing, where it's like, oh, we've got these, you know, 69% say this, 39% of this, we're going to quickly do a 1 minute argument between these two and see what they think.
I remember Mark Steele's tour, when I was thinking about taking trial on tour, going to towns like he has, and like we did with Leicester, but, you know, there's always a local issue. You know, just one local issue. You just need to find the more sort of mundane and regional and local it is, the better. But it's controversial whether that car park should be turned into a Tesco's or a sports centre, or that's a boring one. But, you know, there might be, you know, whether it's a scone or a scone, or whether it's a, you know, what the local food and habits are. Yeah. But I was in Harrogate recently and I'd bumped into Eleanor Conway. And so I went to see her show in Harrogate, and she's not from there. And my dad lives there. And it was really interesting. She's great. She's so hardworking, and to bump into her, and it was really nice. And I actually saw her doing her job out of town, if you see what I mean. And she had this just part of her set. I mean, this is probably standard for a lot of, you know, comedians, I think, when you go touring, find something local to comment on. But she had this joke in her set, which is insulting some group of girls from Dundee, and she would use from Dundee, and said, "Don't why do you use Dundee in Harrogate? You know, always find the local scabby area, because if you just turn up at the station and just ask anyone where is the local place that you would make fun of?" And actually, I probably shouldn't talk about Eleanor in that context anyway. But
I'll message her before it goes out, if you want. I know her quite well. She was doing Walk of Shame too. Is that the show she was doing?
She's found on Tinder. You might know from Tinder or something.
Okay, I'll give her a message and make sure she's okay with it before it goes out. It's fine. I've got a joke in the show where the punchline is the baby would vote Remain. And I did it in a city which was massive Leave vote, and I just changed it. Because I thought, you know what? In the nice way possible, I don't think it's going to work with... The idea is the baby would do the worst thing possible.
Do the opposite too.
And so it has to be what they would want, kind of thing. So I don't have to agree with it at all. Because the irony is in the other two bits as well, because it's like a rule of three thing. That's just the end one, because that's the most divisive. And I know what you mean. It only takes a minute of Google searches for me to find out, did they vote Leave? Did they vote Remain? I'll just switch it and put a little note on my hand and go, remember this time where you're voting Leave, or this time you're voting Remain.
And it doesn't even need, I'm second guessing, but if it's just the baby did something it shouldn't have done as well, or doesn't, that it was disagreeable, or you can, I think quite often we are lured into the one that you think, oh well, everyone knows this thing and has opinion about this thing. But if you're going regionally, everyone regionally in that area has an opinion about a particular thing.
Exactly.
And actually, the more personal you can make it, and this is very much the my original thoughts about This Is Your Trial and the shows that I want to do, is really making the audience feel it's about them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fundamentally it. And so those details are so important, I find. And so when I've got one of the shows this year, Edinburgh, is there's a birthday that they've already bought 50 tickets, which is great. So there's going to be a very definite experience for them.
Yes, of course.
And so I make some extra effort to find out about that group and put it into the comedians. And, and I've done these for the private shows and doing a questionnaire for people who might be put on trial. And it's the effect of having those tiny, nuanced, idiosyncratic details, that's what makes it. That's what really gets everybody on board and makes it feel special. So it's always worth finding the most strange thing, unsuspecting thing to be revealed is very much worth it.
Completely. I mean, it was a real learning curve. I did a gig with Brendan Burns last year. I went on and I did okay. I did not storm it. I did not do very well. And I came off and he pulled me to one side and just went, "You didn't make it enough about them." Mm. And I went, "What do you mean?" He went, they just want to hear about their life for the first 5 minutes and then they'll like you. And I went, "What? How do you know that?" And he went, "You and the first two other acts," because we were, you know, before the break, "none of you acknowledged where you were or talked about them. The MC did." Mm-hmm. And you could see it. They loved the MC. And he went on, and the Fat Duck in, or the Penguin Comedy. So one in Birmingham. Jay Hadley runs. Jay Hadley?
Cook. James Cook? No.
No, James Hadley. Okay. He lives in London. He only goes up once a month for it. I think it's Birmingham. But anyway, And Brendan went on and did sort of 10 minutes of stuff about Birmingham. He ripped a bit on, like, you know, the local, yeah, you know, problem or whatever, and then stormed the shit out of it. And look, Brendan's great. I'm not saying he wouldn't have stormed the shit out anyway, of it anyway. Yes. But he, I remember talking to him afterwards, and he didn't do it in an arrogant, you know, he wasn't like, you know, he was just like, it taught me to watch the MC more.
Yeah.
Because often I'm watching the other acts more, thinking they're going to compare me to those, and they're going to often think, so sometimes I watch another act and they'll do a joke that's similar to mine. I go, okay, I might have to drop that then because I didn't like that one. But it's more the MC, because the MC are actually sort of taking time to talk to the,
yep,
the audience. And so you can see from that, and now I do it actively where I'm like, okay, I can see they're kind of, you know, they want to be talked to a bit, but they don't really want to be engaging. They sort of, they want you to feel like you're not just talking at them and whatever it is. And it was a real learning curve for me, that one, where up until that point, I think, especially as I start to do more and more sort of independent clubs and things, you realise they have a repeat audience there that really care about
that's
coming
right
to that room. And with yours, you know, as a 50 people coming for a birthday party, you know, I don't know 50 people, you know, I don't have, yeah, 50 friends. So that person's obviously quite popular or quite unpopular.
It's a big birthday. It's a special birthday, yeah, but yes.
I was going to say, or quite, yeah, unpopular if they want to just roast him on his, but you know. Yeah. But the point is that that's a moment that you can create for that person's life, and that they might, you know, they're going to remember that. So it's quite important that you make it about them. And
well, always with the trials, always make sure that, I mean, you know, people who, the acts that do it and have done it lots, they know to get straight into the audience, find out, you know, certainly speak to the accusers, speak to people, get everybody as involved as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, get witnesses that have nothing to do with the crime. You know, always, I'm always telling acts to do that. You know, always direct your questions at other people. Ask for their opinion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more that they're involved, they, you know, you get them. If you go out with your argument and just spout that for a bit, they're not going to be as interested.
Completely, yeah. And in terms of social media, the thing that I find really interesting is, and it's the reason why I've sort of shied away from it a little bit at the moment. I kind of keep to my own, which I shouldn't do because echo chain, all that sort of stuff. But people are just so immediate. I've got my opinion. Like, yeah, they're just like, I've read the headline. I don't even read the thing. I've just read the headline. I know what I feel about that vague area of society. And I felt like there's something you can do. Or I haven't quite, you know, this is us spitballing now because I haven't worked it out properly, but all I've written down in my notes is there's got to be something, and maybe this is an audio thing, because I feel like with podcasts, you sit there and you listen to them in your in-between times, or you listen to them when you don't want silence, but you don't want to talk to someone.
Yep.
So there's got to be something in maybe getting, like I said, an actual debate, an actual thing that's there, and getting them to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I do get involved with actual law as well that I find interesting, and you know, and I do I'm opinionated myself, and so I want to encourage that reaction myself. But yes, it's certainly the format of the show lends itself to that. I think, yeah, with recording, you can record audio just on your phone quite simply and quickly, and then just share and put that out, you know. And there's
I should put out, it's hell to edit. Well, off now, your phone.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of the more the, you know, I'm walking around Edinburgh this month, and you know, and I see, if I've got the format, I don't know what it is yet, it's maybe it's just a question. This is Trevor Locke, what, you know, and he puts out this challenge, his question, you know, what do you reckon to the, oh God, I'm going down some sort of serious legal argument. Mm. But, you know, should we ban, oh God, oh, electric scooters?
I don't say that, I just bought one. I say I bought one, yeah. I paid the deposit, whatever. I don't have the money for it yet.
I want one, there's so many of those. Great, yeah.
I've seen the one I want, I gave in because I was like, it's taking me, if I can get, basically, I want to get home as quickly as possible because there's a treadmill in my building, and I like running on a treadmill. So my logic is, if I use the scooter to get home quicker instead of walking, I'll run more, which is stupid logic.
Yes.
But I feel it holds up in if I actually do it.
Yes.
I probably won't. I probably will just get fatter and hate myself because I don't want to get fat again.
I think is it Wall-E when we, you know, they're in the future on the spaceship and everyone's just big blobs being pushed around and motorized around. Oh, and you know, when I see all these different electric devices, and I think they're incredible now. You know, skateboards and segways, and I saw one that looked like a bike. But it had no pedals. It just and it was. I've not seen that style before. Mm. And he just, I think it might have folded away or something. Yeah, well, I think there's something in. You know, I can get access to lots of different funny people. Mm. Have a question. Maybe it's just me asking them a question and getting their opinion on a thing that can be tied into a hashtag legal questions or you know, about the law or something, and then that be provocative, and because it just making something divisive, it's not obvious why there's so many things now people want to take a side, and of course almost every debate and every trial that we do, every trial that happens and everyone that's accused of something in the comedy show, they've always done it. They've always done it. But is that a crime? Was there a defence for that? And that's the creative bit for the comedians to make it a twist on that. Completely. But did you think about that? So having those single questions put out, I think that's a great thing. I think I'll just walk around with one of the wigs and stick it on people and can you make a case for this? And then, less than... Is there a limit audio clips? I know it's minutes on Instagram for video. Is it recommended?
There's a maximum on Instagram and there's a maximum on Twitter. But on podcasts, you can make it any length you want. You know, you can put it a second if you really want.
Yeah, but that's what I think. It doesn't need to be a podcast, though.
Oh no, I'm saying if you wanted to make it a Twitter, I think it's 2 minutes something. I can look it up for you.
Yeah.
But they've got a 2 minute limit, and Instagram have a 1 minute limit for a little video, but then they have a thing called Instagram TV, which is up to an hour. So you can put out, but the problem is that it's the horizontal screen thing, so you'd have to you'd have to record it slightly differently, and the way the recordings you've sent me are all kind of like landscape rather than either square, which is what Instagram would come out as.
Right.
So it would either crop or it would look, or it would come out. So on a screen, you would have it landscape, but it doesn't rotate.
That's right. I hate. I'm always telling people to go landscape, and actually now with Instagram, record.
Well, when Stuart Goldsmith did a pilot of Everyone's a Comedian in Edinburgh in the what's the nightclub called? Opium Nightclub on the thing, and he asked me to live stream it for people to get involved, and you know, I was helping him back and forth. So I recorded it on a phone that way, because he knew that it would probably be needed. It's such bad quality because A, your phone doesn't work very well in low light, and B, you've got to sort of leave it there anyway, so you can't really get involved even though people are jumping in and out, because if you move it, you lose the feed, and so you have to get I don't know.
And often you don't need the video, and the video doesn't add anything. So sometimes you know.
Just wanted a video.
I think I am going to experiment on ideas. I think this year in this August. I mean, this August I always experiment with something, but short and lots is I think a way to go, and you know something will appeal to somebody, and you know, and how it might just start a thing. And also the shorter, the less effort
that's investment.
So watch this space, we'll see what crap we can come up with.
This is so much fun to edit. I'm really enjoying hearing back David's thoughts on what social media does and doesn't work for his night in terms of promotion online, and what he's tried and what he's failed at, as well as his thoughts on crowdfunding. It was really exciting, given I've got Kickstarter coming on the podcast in a few weeks' time to talk about crowdfunding for comedians for their project. Go to the Facebook group and throw me your questions for them now, because I'll be doing that shortly. So I'd really appreciate any exciting questions you've got for Kickstarter. While you write your questions, why not listen to this podcast episode's advert? Here it comes.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. What a great product and or service. I'm very grateful for their ad money. It's probably about a penny if I'm honest with you, but it's still there. As I've mentioned at the start of the podcast, my book, How to Make a Living by Working for Free, is on sale on my website and Amazon. I prefer you to buy it from my website because Amazon take months to pay me and it's such a small amount of money that it's almost hardly worth me chasing. If you'd like to buy a copy of it, feel free to check out the link in the show notes. If you'd like me to do any social media consultancy work for your club or social media copywriting, either comedy or otherwise, please do drop me an email. Right, now let's jump back into the podcast with David Allison.
It's not even easy. I think it's just that's how it is because I think comedians are more open-minded than most. And I think, and this is my opinion on whichever side, I think the right wing side is definitely more assertive and confirmed and decided of what they think. I think the nature of being a comedian is exploratory, is, and this is, I tapped into, you know, I'm not a comedian, I didn't set off to be one, but I, you know, law and argument and being, seeing the other side of the story and the, being a devil's advocate. I think that's far more a left-leaning way. Of course, the extreme left are so fixated in not in their way of thinking as well, but it's there's a lot more options to be left, and I mean kind, I think kind is where to be mean then, and selfish is just is singular,
but I think that's such a stereotype of the two sides, because I mean, I don't know if you just saw Jeff Norcock, he did a TV show on BBC called How the Middle Class Ruined Britain. Right, and I watched it on the way up here, and I was going to go into it thinking, because immediately the title made me go, I'm not going to like this, right? And I thought, no, I'm going to do what I try and do at least, is go into it and go, I haven't made my decision. I've sort of made a decision before watching it, but I want to kind of go into it with an open mind, and I loved it. And, he's openly right wing, he's openly conservative, he's openly a lot of the opposite to what I believe, but he made some very valid points that I agree with.
Yeah,
and so I get. And
but he's a comedian, but he's
very,
and he's open.
But he's very caring. He's genuinely very. You know, like one of the things he said was about how he keeps saying how you know, it was better in the old days where he, you know, was talking about his council state upbringing and how he loved that. But he's like, I don't want this for my kids. As much as I say it's great and it was better, I don't want this for my kids. And it's like, I think there's a lot of that. I think there's a lot of, you know, in his conservative heart, he wants, you know, to have his money and, you know, keep his money and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because his caring comes out in a different way.
Comedians are more vocal and opinionated than anyone else anyway. And actually...
for better or for worse.
So for, you know, left or right or whatever, they are not... the majority of people don't give a shit about anything. Classes or whatever he might be talking about, I think, is they don't have an opinion. You know, they don't. It's very localized and it's about themselves. That's the more default way of thinking is conservative and look after your own, look after your family, to think about beyond your own and your family and everybody. Just it's impossible to actually equate them or have a same standard or level of, you know, this how far left and how far right. It's it's not measurable because it's just more specific, I think, on the right about very exact things. And I think it's like left and right side of a brain, isn't it? When the more feeling side of the brain and the more rational side of the brain, they're different. It's the way around, isn't it, as well? I think the left side is actually the
heartless side, the rational.
Heartless.
Well, that brings me on nicely into talking to you about, because you said that you, some people say, oh, you should only post about the gigs on there. And personally, I, whenever I'm talking to someone about their social media, I don't think that's a good idea either. I think you should your personality and you should be part of that feed, because ultimately although they're buying into the show, they're also buying into a brand of you. And I mean, I was doing some stuff with, I was talking to Lee Moore from Tales of Whatever. He runs a storytelling spoken word night, that sort of thing in the Midlands, and he was saying, you know, how can we, you know, what kind of stuff can we do that lets our personality out and stuff, and I said to him, I'm often on my own on trains. I've got a running joke with my followers where I take a photo of me on my own on a train and I go, I'm the most attractive person on this train. And it's a silly joke. It's probably no one's laughing at this point because I've done it a million times, but it gets loads of responses from people because they're like, oh, he's done it again. Like, he's on a train on his own. And I know, you know, I always tag the place I'm going, so it's kind of a bit of an advert and stuff. And they're looking into how they can, you know, because they're constantly moving that show around the festivals and things, and they're going to, you know, take photos of where am I now. I saw Phil Nickel doing that recently on Twitter. He was taking photos of somewhere where he was and going, guess where I am. Guess where I'm on tour, kind of thing. And I really like that idea because it kind of gets them involved and they're like, oh, I wonder if I can... And it makes you look out for it as well. It's like, oh, I wonder where he is today, you know?
Yeah, I think there's... I mean, I see that with the different acts who have their... it's not gimmick, but that what they're known for and what they're interested in. I think it's absolutely important to... not just be a series of it's social media, so it's supposed to be the original intent of it is for interaction, the ability to interact, whether how other people use it and or use social media, whether they're looking for entertainment or looking for information about whatever you're doing, you can't second guess. You don't need to try and you're not doing it for them as well. You know, I think you use it for your own fun. I mean, I'm not the one that people are buying tickets for, and they're buying for my shows. But I actually am the. I'm always there, and I'm always part of the conversation. I am going to not hide myself behind my social media. I don't like repetition. I can't repeat something. So, you know, and when I know people can set up these repeat posted things at certain times with the information about that. I wish I was organized to do that in many ways, but I would just be bored of it myself. And I think depending on what you're, I mean, I was listening to, I think people can get fixated about the results and think that that number of likes or that retweets means something, and how many followers, and if that's that's not selling a ticket, or you know, that's you can get lots of response just by being a dick, being, you know, having some, you know, think of the Katie Hopkins and all of, you know, you can get responses if you want to deal with them, or use it as a playground just to you know, try things, practice things, and that's what I do. And I do sometimes get confused because I've got a number of accounts, and then I'll retweet it that from the other one instead, because I think this one I have do have a This Is Your Trial Twitter account, and I do try to use that more specifically for the show, and my This Is Your Laugh Twitter account is my umbrella one, and that's me. And then, yeah, and I've got a I've got a specific comedy auction one as well, so I am being more deliberate.
Yeah,
but it's admin, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the problem. I mean, another thing I was thinking about when I was writing notes for your thing is, you've obviously got the comedian there for longer than the actual showtime. You know, they have to turn up a bit early. You know, prep them a little bit. You know, like, oh, this one's a birthday party or whatever it would be. And my thought was, if you were to record, let's say, 10 sound bites from the comedians, just like sort of to camera, you know, come to the next trial and then like the date of it or whatever it would be, you could put them out over certain periods of time that allow people to sort of see what's happening, where it's going, who's involved, because you obviously have one of the things we were talking about is how you're looking at basically sticking to your regulars, because you know now who can do it well, maybe getting the odd person in new, but you know how it works. And so obviously as a product, in a weird way, you kind of, a bit like how there are maybe 20 or 30 comedians who do the panel show circuit, you know, they're going to keep getting better, and so it's going to become harder for new people to break in, because ultimately they're going to get the practice in. So if you're going to stick to the a regular group of, let's say, five people that you rotate, there's an opportunity to bring their personality out into social media as well, and their you know, even in like 10-15 second clips of, you know, my gavel's ready, what are you bringing to it, or you know,
I mean, there's done some things like that before, and it's often maybe not found the one that particularly works. I mean, it's difficult with, maybe because even then there's still a lot of different things that acts are doing anyway, but I guess because there's not a lot of consistency, despite appearances, or there's not a lot of consistency with any of the activities that I've ever been organising and doing. You know, there's been little patches of, oh, there's a run here of so many monthly shows on this, so then this is going to happen. Then people drop out as well, and I've committed things to, you know, to different people, and then I might have made more than enough effort to try and promote it with, I mean, just as an example, and Tim doesn't mind this, but you know, he was in the poster one year, the poster for Fringe wasn't there, but he was there all year, and that was, you know, unfortunately he had to pull out last minute. So I've learnt, I mean, it was a great picture of him, and it still told the show, but yeah, making too elaborate a campaign and then it doesn't work. You know, there's only so many hours in a day, and you know what to do. But yeah, I've done things before and after shows with acts, you know, just getting photos sometimes. But you know, there's always packing up. There's always, you know, there's always actually, oh, when a show's finished, no, I don't want to do anything more as well. And so, no, I understand what you say, but I feel like I've tried so many different things, and some have worked okay.
Well, why don't we, so like as a sort of rounding up thing, why don't we talk about things that you've tried that you think have, in your definition, failed? So we can kind of break down why they didn't work, maybe what went wrong, or maybe how they might work for other nights but just didn't work for yours.
In marketing or just general production, or just...
I was talking social media and marketing.
Social media. So, yeah. I think because I've always had mixed bills and different comedians on with different shows, and it's changed. I think that it's changed now how keen people are to retweet their selves as attached to a show. I think that was a good thing for a while, certainly for me, and it's you know, and I think that there comes a point when, I think it's just come a point generally that people are looking after their own image and their own brand. They can't be attached to, and you know, and some comedians have told me that they've how they need to be only promoting their own things. So that's something that has changed, I've noticed, and so that definitely is strategy that I say I've never relied on it, but I don't use. I don't expect much from that. And
because the comedian's name doesn't sell the show, the show sells.
No,
the
it's
show.
More. It's you know, it's all about trying to get your message out wider. And so,
right.
So by tagging, associating somebody else, that you know, you get into their audience and get into their followers. And so, right. But if the more that different acts are involved with lots of different things, it can dilute their own projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I think acts are sharing themselves less,
right,
in ways, or you know, in they, you know, and often you'll find, you know, some acts have already decided they don't want their image tagged, or their, you know, two okay. things. And so there's obviously there becomes a tipping point for mm-hmm. How many times can I be, I'm getting bored of all these things that I'm attached to.
Completely. The thing that I was going to ask you about was whether things like Google Ads worked, whether Facebook Ads worked, whether there was a particular platform you feel, either, because sometimes, so for me, I find Twitter gets me more engagement than any other platform, mm-hmm. but I find ticket sales come from Facebook. So that's a really interesting one for me. I think that's partly because my Facebook is my Facebook. I don't have a page anymore. So people who add me on there, or people who find me on there in the end, and sort of I accept the ad of, are people who have seen me repeatedly, and so people who are more likely to come back. Whereas Twitter, maybe I'm not in their city, maybe they don't know what I'm doing, maybe they're less emotionally invested in me and what I'm doing as a job. So things like that, it's like where so for example, on paper I could class Twitter as a fail because it doesn't sell tickets, yeah. or it doesn't sell yeah. many tickets. Whereas, or for example, my main list, for example, that sort of has 5-10% return rate of people buying tickets, which on paper, you know, you might think is a fail, but the more I've spoken to people, actually that's quite high for people buying tickets. In terms of, say I email 100 people, 10 people will buy a ticket, that's quite nice, or 5-10 people, you know. So there's part of me that's like, you know, investing more time in my main list than anything else, because
that, yeah,
even though no one can see that and no one else, you know, knows what's going on with that, it's yeah.
Okay, my biggest failure, just as a general thing, is not creating a mailing list.
Right.
What an idiot. And even, I can't honestly believe it.
Are you heckling your past self?
Oh, well, just I still can't. I mean, I've got people coming in, filling in pieces of paper, printed pieces of paper with accusations about themselves.
You could put their email address in there.
I know. Easily. Well, yeah. I mean, there is a slot. There is a slot that it yeah, is yeah. there, but they, I just not gone and copied them. I've just, you know,
you've not typed them out.
I've not typed, you know, and I've sort of had little waves of trying to gather them, but I've never ordered, tidied it. I've lost a lot of those
yeah,
and things like that, and just got so many different accusation sheets, and it's like, oh, I just put this, just gone in the bin, and it's like, oh, I've wasted so much of that contact gathering. And I think I've just thought that whatever Facebook friends and Twitter accounts, that'll do. But I've not got a mailing list that I run or organise, and I should have. That's a big mistake. Yeah, with Facebook, I think I don't think I've really cracked how to do the ads well on that. And when I've done Google ads, and that was quite expensive in the end, and I think I didn't spend enough time looking into how to get the best of it. I did get lots of phone calls, but it was generally people. I did an ad that was for Christmas, comedians for Christmas, you know, it's trials for Christmas parties.
Christmas trials, yeah, yeah.
But it was the phrase comedians that just got loads of inquiries, people looking for comedians, and it was generally for charity events.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not an agent. I did manage to redirect bookings to people but I'm thinking, oh God, I've missed a goal here, open goal here. I would go back to Google Ads, I think, if you get some experience or not someone to help you with the SEO and all of that, something specific. So that's something I would definitely go back to. Some of the ticket sites, I found Skiddle was surprised. That delivered some audiences that I'd never... I've only used them like once, but they suddenly brought people I never knew. I'm not quite sure how that worked. I need to look at them again. Design My Night, they have been good, and they at times hoop for the family show. But those, you know, sometimes they sort of want more from the ticket sites. You want them to share, but they sell all different services and...
Design My Night, try that. They have like you know, sort of their city pages, and I quite like that. And they have their you know, their lists, you know, like coming up this weekend and whatever. I know Skiddle do that a little bit, which is maybe how that happened. So for me, whenever I'm on the coast or whenever I'm like sort of traveling around southern to London, that usually is the place that gets people in. Whereas in the Midlands, I find Eventbrite's quite popular. So it I think it's just whatever app they've been, people want to be targeting.
Yeah, I guess there's so much still to learn though, isn't there? I think just when you think, oh, I think I'm getting it, I still feel like I know nothing. I spent a lot on Facebook ads one for a period and didn't really know what I was doing. And I bought an ad in Viz magazine some years ago, which was cool to have, and they persuaded me because they, you know, had a deal on, but I don't think that was worth it. I don't know what that was for.
Do you think the reason why you're not doing a mailing list is because mailing list has a lot, at the start anyway, has an initial learning curve that's harder than Facebook ads? Because Facebook ads, in my, you know, I do them all the time, where you sort of fill out what you're after, essentially, like age range, gender, whatever it is, and then they just go out. Whereas with a mailing list, I had to learn how their back end works, how a form would look on my website, how to filter it down so I can email, you know, certain people in different cities. And now I know how to do it. It's piss easy, and it makes my life a lot happier. But I am
not great at attention to detail at all, and I am impatient, get bored, it needs to be immediate. And so yes, it's more, oh god, I'm just identifying my failings. But I think delegating is probably a strategy, and what often we independent producers, creators do is we cannot help but try and do everything. And then, you know, often we don't have the choice because it's our thing. Yeah. But I think I've had my best bits of periods of success is actually when letting go and letting, you know, having other people in the team and on board. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that I think it's, you can find those people. Mm-hmm. There's some very keen students looking for work experience. Found that there's a website which I've been using and looking at called Magnet. That's good for that. This is what one of the entrepreneurial scheme showed me. People on that were getting interns from through this site, and so that's a tip that I've not fully taken on board, but I see it. Yeah, I think the challenges are, I think so many, you know, performers are multimedia as well now, and, you know, or have always been, and, you know, do a bit of filming, bit of recording, and I think it's great. They can be, you know, super productive with that. But the ones that really take advantage are the ones that form groups and collaborations, and, you know, like the Weirdos, and certainly I've been doing quite a bit of stuff with different acts with Ebden Management. You know, doing podcasts and things together, and videos and sketches. And I think that's great for the sanity of anyone in the business. It's not you by yourself.
No,
so
totally.
Much of the time it is on stage. But finding those other specialists as well.
It's something I'm trying to do more of, is collaborate more with people, and I'm looking at starting a podcast network to try and like share audiences and stuff, because, you know, I mean, I'm with Acast, the network, and they are great for what they do, but in terms of sharing audiences, they don't really do as much cross promotion as I'd like. So, you know, I'm trying to set something up where, you know, if you're at the same sort of ish level, or you're in the same area at least, because you know there are some podcasts that are still growing but they're in the same area. I want to see if we can kind of work together and see if that will work. And a few people have approached me and been like, yeah, I'd love to get involved, because I think that's the, you know, let's say you have 1,000 followers and someone else has 1,000 followers, there might be 100 on each that would be interested in both of you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense why if I could gain 100 and you can gain 100, and then maybe later on we realize, oh, actually, we're, you know, there's actually worth doing a gig together here, because there's 100 people in each one. You know, if there's 200 people and there's a 30-seater room, we could probably, you know, sell it out between us. So I you know, it's sort of weird when you were saying before that some comedians like to be a bit, I know that vibe of like, I don't want to promote too much of other things because I'm already doing my own thing and I'm already doing my own tour and stuff. So it's kind of, I think it's a balancing act for me personally, where I want to retweet some clubs, but if I'm doing a tour date on the same week, I might not retweet all of their tweets because
it does feel like there's a sense of performance feeling that it's competitive, or that there's, you know, and it's always hard to get, it's always a challenge to get enough people going to your own thing. Mm. I mean, but certainly in Edinburgh, even shows that are on at the same time as yours, people are rarely going to, it's not one or the other that, forget that night. If they've gone to your show that night, tell them to go to the other show at the same time another night. It's sometimes the lack of or the fear competition, and it's not, everyone's so different.
If they're gonna,
every act and every show is different. It's not competing, it's a time slot. People will go to something that's on at the time that suits them. They're not that discerning.
Most of the people that I recommend, A, I like the work of, and B, if they're going to go to them, they're not going to go to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're in the mood for, let's say, Adele Cliff doing one-liners, you're not going to come see me. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to see Jos Norris doing his salad, you're not going to come see me. If you're going to see, you know what I mean? So that's not me doing that strategically. You know, I'm not you know, picking Beck Hill because she's so different to me. It's because I like their work, and also I don't see people as competition in that way. I get compared to people in reviews. You know, someone in a review compared me to James Veitch recently, and I'm like, I don't get a TV screen out next to me and talk about my, you know, flatmates and where I don't. Is it because I'm a white man with glass? Like, is that all you know?
Yeah.
Sort of weird. I got compared to Stuart Lee in a review, and I was like, I'm nothing. What, they call me a skinny Stuart Lee, and I was like, okay, I'll take skinny. But frankly, I'm nothing like him, and you know, it's a weird. I remember emailing that reviewer going, are you sure that was for me? Because I don't think that's the thing. But it's that thing where I think that's just them using a shorthand to make it easier for the reader, because like you said, audiences don't always know who they're watching. They don't always know, they know a big name, and so they want an easy comparison for that. But I don't think there's that much competition, and if there is that much competition, you should be more worried about the fact your act isn't unique enough.
Yeah, just do your show
that it isn't standing out than the competition. You should be changing yours to make it more interesting, so there isn't competition.
There's no competition. It's not a competition. You know, audiences will come or they won't, and it's either fits into their schedule or they're not. It's, you can't get in the heads of one or the other, and if you've helped another, you can be winning that. If that was a competition, that generosity is admirable, because if you're recommending somebody who's good, they'll have, if they're listening to you anyway. I don't know. I'm sort of going on circles with this, but I think there can be a bit too much paranoia. Just do the best you can.
Completely. I'm going to do the last quick fire questions. So what's one unpopular opinion you have about the comedy industry?
I think something about comedy, or that irritates comedy industry, that irritates me is there's a certain fear of being called a sellout, or how you make decisions that are against the art, I think there's a lot of unnecessary worry about being thought of as being a sellout, or having betrayed the craft, or as if, I mean, I love the romance of the idea that, you know, comedians are soothsayers or prophets, or, you know, their knowledge, but they're not all that, and it should be taken too seriously. So be sell, you know, you can sell yourself. You're allowed to sell yourself. It's not, I think I've just had, you know, I had some experiences with different comedians, because I am selling. Selling is important, and I'm not the artist. So it can be frustrating when some performers don't want to do some things because they'll feel like it'd be selling themselves out.
Okay. Makes sense. What is the biggest misconception people have about you?
Maybe if they think I'm at all organized.
I share that one, by the way.
Yeah, I have moments, but I'm generally winging it, and I'm quite fearless and will give it all a go. But I'm not very organized.
Who do you think is the most underrated person in the industry?
I think in many ways, probably Tom Tuck. I know he's incredibly talented, and I don't think that's doubted, but I think he might have missed certain breaks when he should have had them. And I think, you know, he's might have created a bit of a reputation for not being hardworking, but he's super hardworking and committed, and despite appearances, I think it's a misconception. So I think Tom Tuck should be more successful. I think he is super successful, but, you know, I think he might have felt that he could have been more somewhere. I don't know, more TV, something like that. He should be Doctor Who.
If you had an extra hour in the day, how would you spend it?
Oh, God, I should actually do nothing. I should meditate, in fact. I know I should do something like yoga or meditation, just take a breather. I know this would be really healthy for me. And if I had it, there'd be no that extra hour, there'd be no excuse. I should just do that. I think I'll just continue doing just a bit more of the same messy stuff that I fill in all the other hours with.
Fair. If you could, well, normally I'd ask, if you could go back to just before your first gig and give yourself one bit of advice, what would you do? What would you say? For you, I suppose that'd be different. So maybe if you could go back and give yourself one bit of advice before you ran the first trial, what would you say to yourself?
I wouldn't say anything to myself, because I think
you just stand there, make yourself weird.
Yeah, I'd just say, you know, just enjoy this. Because you're gonna do more of them, you know. I think I probably believe that then anyway. But I don't think I will start a mailing list. Do the mailing list. Pay attention to gathering the names. That's it. Mailing list. That's it.
Okay. I was gonna say, what's one thing you wish you were better at? But I think you're gonna say mailing list, aren't you?
Well, that's not a skill in itself. In one thing. I mean, that's just I think I would like to been better at my own confidence of performing. I'm not a performer. I'm not very eloquent or focused, and it's part of my condition. But, you know, I think just to public speaking. I mean, that's a general thing I wish, and that maybe that's why I love working with comedians and people who are excellent at it. Hoping some of it might rub off one day. Yeah, that's a thing through my life. I'm pretty good in social situations, but as soon as I've ever been on stage or put in front of an audience to present something, I just freeze, unless I'm hypnotized. Listen, I was hypnotized at Fringe a couple of years ago and did a show a whole hour on stage hypnotized. Wow. And that was amazing. So I'd like that feeling. Yeah. Being hypnotized. That's what I'd like to have the skill to be able to
be constantly hypnotized.
To be constantly hypnotized to perform. Shows. Yeah.
Last question then. If you could give one bit of advice to a couple of thousand comedians who'll hear this, who maybe want to start a themed show in some capacity, maybe not an improv show, but a themed show, what would you say to them? And it can be either or, the best bit of advice you've been given, or just a bit of advice that you've learned sort of through.
Do something on what you know. Don't try and think you've thought of something that no one else has thought of, and because somebody else will have thought of it because it's what they know. So always focus on what you know. Hopefully you know something that's a bit different to most people, and that's what makes it, you know, that's how you can own it, and that's how you can be confident about it. So, you know, clearly for me, law was something that I knew more than most. But I have, having worked in TV and developing ideas and stuff, people come to you and say, oh, I've got this idea for a thing that they don't know anything about that thing, and you, and it's like they've, yeah, do what you know. I think that's the same for writing jokes though as well, isn't
yeah,
it? It's,
yeah,
you know, it's a starting point.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to theming a night, it's, you know, I mean, I run a kink friendly comedy night, yeah, in London, and that has led to a lot of people finding out that I'm quite kinky, but they were, I feel like it comes out in my show anyway, so it's not really, you know, but it's what I know,
yeah,
and it's what I do. Whereas, you know, and I'm starting a dog friendly comedy night, and I think most people know I fucking love a dog.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, it's whereas, you know, if I tried other things, I think it's slightly harder to sell, you know what I mean,
like,
you,
yeah,
because you've got to sell it ultimately, and if you're not, it's, you know, it's why a lot of PRs say I have to come and see the show, and if I don't like the show I can't really work with you, even if I think you're a nice person and you're funny. Mm. It's just, it's, what am I going to do, you know, they're going to see past it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jess Fosterkew doing Hoovering, and, you know, she loves food.
Yeah, she's, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. You know, I'll do one about Sabutio, I'll do one about yo-yoing, you know, these are things that I know I am into. Mm. And do. Mm. Or it's got to be something that you know. And then, I mean, I, you know, my new show, Comedy Auction, I knew a bit about that. You know, I knew it. So, and it fit, and it followed a similar sort of format to Trial. So don't try and invent something that you think is just, oh, that'd be a weird idea, and that's putting two things together. And no, have some weight behind the topic or the theme or the idea that is already there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And
enjoyed it.
See you soon. That was David. I loved throwing about 30 ideas at him and seeing what sticks. I hope that we continue to work together, because I have just so many ideas for the night that he's putting on and for the content that he produces. I learned loads about crowdfunding, about what does and doesn't work according to his perspective and experience. As I mentioned, Kickstarter are coming on the podcast, so if you have any questions for them, I've put a link in the show notes, but your best bet is to search for the Ask the Industry podcast group on Facebook and chuck me your questions there. I think he's done so much in a short space of time. I loved how targeted he's been about the future of This Is Your Trial, and how he continues to promote the shows to corporate clients while balancing it with tour shows at festivals like the Edinburgh Fringe and beyond. You should go and totally check out that show if it's in a city near you. I know he's putting a lot on in London. I'm actually doing one in a few weeks' time. I think I'll find out the date and put it in the show notes so you can have a look at that. I'm very excited to try that out. If you have an office Christmas party coming up and you're looking for something a little bit different, I'd also recommend dropping him an email. I'll put a link to his email address in the show notes as well. If you've enjoyed this, I'd highly recommend two episodes that are very similar. The one with David Mulholland, the founder and Big Cheese at the Soho Comedy Club, and Barry Ferns and Sarah Pierce, the two of the founders of Angel Comedy, about how they crowdfunded the last bit of money they needed to launch one of the most exciting comedy clubs in London for a long time. So I would check both those episodes out. The Ask the Industry podcast has been a Fruit That Got in Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements were created by me, comedian Simon Kane. Thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for subscribing, and thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea, with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.